Hello there. We'd like to welcome you to the virtual kitchen table. We're Erin from Everlearning, Ashley from Ashley's Mama and Storytime Shelves, and myself, Hayley from Taking a Kinder Path. We're gathering for conversations about family life and home education, particularly unschooling, which is sometimes known as self-directed learning, or as I like to call it, natural learning. We'll be sharing our experiences and ideas, learning as we go. We hope you'll pull a chair up to the table and join us.
Welcome to the virtual kitchen table. I'm Erin, and I'm here with Hayley. And unfortunately, we don't have Ashley with us today, but we do have Missy Willis from Let 'Em Go Barefoot and Sue Elvis from Stories of an Unschooling Family. And today we are talking about what I think is going to be quite an interesting topic, which is looking at the years of middle, sort of the middle years, midlife, and really embracing that from an unschooling mindset. Missy had written an article recently, and it's kind of like when you read something and you realize that certain things have been on your mind, but you didn't realize. I don't know, I was reading it and I was relating to so many pieces that I realized like separately had kind of been swimming around for me. And then just the way you put it together, Missy, it really spoke to me. And then, yeah, Hayley, I guess you and I were just talking. We've been wanting to have Sue back to chat anyway. And Sue, as much as you know, you're often talking about the younger years and kids, there's always an element of, I think what you often call adult unschooling, and just really approaching life with that kind of energy and sense of openness that we often develop over the years from unschooling. And I think you've had the last couple of years, you've kind of moved on from having had school age kids. So I feel like you probably have a lot to share that I'm kind of looking forward to digging into as well. So I don't even really know where to start because I'm just so excited to chat with the three of you. I will, I guess, talk a little bit just as a starting point, Missy, about what came up for me when I think about approaching this part of life with an unschooling mindset, which is something that I've noticed is that the level of curiosity that I seem to have compared to a lot of other people my age seems to be a little greater. And I think it's probably partly from, you know, so many years of really trying to be present with kids in the moment, pointing things out, noticing things. I think it has a lot to do with just slowing down and taking note of things. So, you know, I would notice at times, let's say I was, I don't know, at a function and you have one of those like lunchtime breaks and you go for a little walk with people. And I would just be noticing stuff, and whether it was a certain type of bird or, you know, colors in the sky or whatever, I was just noticing things in a way that I noticed other people weren't. And if I mentioned it, they would be like, oh yeah, that's really pretty. Or, you know, that's really interesting. But it felt a little bit more like maybe they were more on autopilot, like we have our lunch break, we'll go for a walk, we'll get a breath of fresh air. And I was kind of that maybe slightly irritating person going, oh, you know, did you know the robins are back? Or whatever, I'm noticing all these little things. And I noticed that in a lot of different contexts now, that I think having spent that time with kids and slowing down, noticing all the little pieces, has changed probably who I am at this part of my life. And I definitely can, if I think back to myself as a younger child, I definitely always noticed those things. But somewhere along the line, I think we come about the idea that we just have to press forward. And yeah, that's kind of interesting. Maybe on Saturday, I will read that book or take a walk and notice those things. And so I do think there's just a little bit of a distinction in the way that I go about things. So I would be curious if anybody else can relate to that or notices that within themselves.
I think we live in a culture, don't we? The saying, what is it? Oh, you can't teach an old dog new tricks or something. And I feel like a lot of people, there's an idea of just accepting that, I guess. And I think sometimes there's a, not necessarily an individual people, but kind of a societal view that maybe learning is for younger people, and that, you know, as you get older, the idea that you've already learned what you're going to learn. And I think, I guess, yeah, I guess living with our children in a more unschooling way has definitely given, yeah, definitely given me, I think, perhaps a different approach than I might have had had I not discovered this kind of way of being, maybe. And I think that's what I loved about your article, Missy. It was that was really not what you were saying at all. You were kind of saying the opposite of that, that to, you know, to the more we can continue to embrace wonder and yeah, and learning, then the more that the easier it is for all of us to transition to whatever the different stages of life might bring. So I think that's what I really love that message.
Thank you both for reading it, and also I'm so glad it meant something to you, because it was one of those sort of things have been kind of tricky over the last couple of years for me personally in our life, and it just was sitting on my heart, and I was like, you know, this is amazing to me when you really think about life and the trajectory of our lives and how, like, with our children, sometimes accidentally we start predicting where they're going to go, what they're going to do, where they're going to live, who they're going to be with, and we do that because we see what they're doing currently and we think, okay, well, they're doing this particular activity, therefore they're going to be that person, or somebody. Like, I just always think this is a funny story, and maybe I even shared it last time, because my daughter was very, very into styling hair when she was like 4, 5, 6, to the point where, like, her cousins were even saying, like, will you do my hair? And my grandmother, so adorable, was like, she's gonna be a hairstylist. And I'm like, she's 7, we don't have to go that far yet. But we do that, right? Like, we see what their interests are and we think. And so I took that and I transferred it to us as adults. Like, oh, well, you're an adult now, so you've arrived. You're done. But that's not true. I mean, there's so many people who reinvented themselves in their 50s and 60s. And I think there's, is it Louise Hay from Hay House? Publication, I think, wasn't she like 60 years old or something when she made that company? And so people like that, I feel, are so inspiring, because they're a great example of, I had an interest and I just went with it, and look what it created. And not that any of us need to turn around and create multi-million-dollar companies or whatever in our 50s and 60s, but it just speaks to the idea that learning happens all the time and we're never done. And if anything, it's such a wonderful time to strive in a different way than we did when we were younger, because now we have a different perspective. We don't have the concerns that we had when our kids were younger. They're much more independent, so we do have this a bit more freedom and flexibility in our own lives. So why not take advantage of that and continue to see yourself as a learner and be curious and allow your own interests to kind of lead the way? We're not done yet, so don't discount us.
Oh my gosh, yes. And Sue, sorry, Sue, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that when I finished university, and I remember throwing all my books in the bin, all my lecture notes, all my textbooks in the bin, I didn't value them at all. And I remember thinking, nobody is going to be make me learn anything ever again. And that's, I've written about that sentence a lot, how I was forced to learn. I lost my love of learning and my curiosity. And you're talking about how you're curious, Erin. Well, it took me a little while to realize that my kids, when we were fighting over schoolwork, getting them to do things so that we would have records for our homeschool record keeping. And I was thinking in terms of children learn. And I've done mine. I don't. I've suffered. It's their turn to suffer. And it struck me one day, That's a terrible way to think about learning and how I had to regain my curiosity. And that's what unschooling has given me. I have realized that in order for my kids to be curious people and to learn, I had to be a curious person as well. A good example of learning. It wasn't something that kids did. It was something we all did. Our learning is like breathing. And if I wanted to have kids who loved learning, which is what I wanted, then I would have to regain my curiosity and love learning as well, which turned out to be not something that was difficult. It wasn't traumatic having to go and learn. I found that when we're curious people and we're in control of our learning, it's totally different to being at school and at university being told what to learn. And I feel, Erin, that that's, you know, that's where I got my curiosity. And as I'm in my older years now, and you said that you will go out and you'll see the robins and you'll have wonder and awe about them and you want to tell somebody. And I feel that's where it's come from, is that we've got so used to doing that with our children that it's second nature to notice things around us and to put it in. It doesn't sound very exciting to say that we have to be a good example of learning. We do it because we've got to be a good example of learning. But it's a good starting point that it is true that we all have to have that curiosity. And that curiosity can be regained for adults who've been through the school system. And it's necessary that we do regain that curiosity if we want our children to be enthusiastic about the world and learning. And I'm not saying that I have to learn all the things in the school syllabus, but to just be curious people. And I do the same sort of things as you, Erin. I'm always looking for, looking things up, pointing things out, thinking about, even though I don't have children anymore who are registered homeschoolers, it hasn't stopped. I still feel that need to keep on learning. And what really makes me sad is, you know, just odd moments. I'll be standing in the shopping center and I'll be waiting in a queue or something, and I'll see people walk by who are roughly my age or a bit older, and they, you know, their eyes are not alight. They're plodding. Their whole body language doesn't say, I'm out here and I'm really enthusiastic and I'm enjoying my day. It's like, I'm older now and got to get through my day, and I'm going to go and get a cup of coffee, and then I'm going to plod home. And I think, I'm not ready to do that, if at all, if I'm ever ready to do that. I don't want to sit and knit. I don't want to, I don't know, I don't want to fill in time. I want to be part of the bigger conversation for, well, forever. I don't see that it has to end just because, well, firstly, because I have no longer have any school-age children, but just because I've passed out the other side into my older years. But I was thinking, Erin, also the title midlife or, you know, middle-aged people. But I'm not really in that group, Erin, because if I got my age and it was the middle year of my life, I would live to 126, and that's not possible, is it? I think I'm in the unique, well, not unique because there are a lot of big families, but not the average family. A lot of smaller families, the parents or the mother in particular, if they're homeschooling, they've passed into the stage earlier. I've, because I'm older and because I've got lots of children, I have reached this stage at a later date. So I'm facing the issues maybe or of the midlife years at an older age, because if I explained that well enough, because I have lots of children, and I've, even though I've looked older than everybody else, having children of the same age as younger mothers has kept me within that group of younger mothers for quite a while. And it's only now that my last child, who is 20, and it's been 3 years since we finished with formal homeschool registration requirements, it's only now that I'm sort of thinking, oh, wow, I've joined midlife people, but I'm not really midlife. I need another term. I wouldn't call myself senior, even though I've got a senior's card, because senior is all those grey-haired people who sit around in the shopping centre drinking coffee and don't know what to do. I don't know. Maybe I'm over-generalised. That's an over-generalisation of people in their 60s and 70s. But I do feel that unschooling people had that added spark and curiosity that you're talking about, Erin. And similarly, when I join in with groups of people when we're having discussions, oh, I'm over the top, but you know that already, that I talk too much. But I bring ideas that they're not even thinking about. And I'm thinking, oh dear, I go home and I think, oh dear, I dominated that conversation yet again. And they're all just sitting there thinking, wow. but yeah, I've dominated this bit of the conversation too. But it's not like I want to look at myself as having a superior outlook on life. All I want to say is that I feel blessed that we've gone through this unschooling phase, and that I've seen the possibilities that other people haven't had the opportunity to. Maybe that's a better way of putting it. Not that there's anything wrong with this older group, but I think that having unschooled, our eyes are more open to the possibilities, and we have more confidence about things we could do. And we haven't been told that, right, now you're a senior, you're going to get cheap travel on the train and go and knit.
Right. Well, and I was just going to add what you said about the spark and interest. I think that's just really what it is. It's that you follow the spark within. What is it that I'm interested in doing? Where do I shine? What makes me feel alive? And the unschooling mindset kind of invites us to be that way on the regular basis about everything. And it also sort of puts the expectations that we might have had about ourselves particular times in our lives, or what we thought midlife was going to look like, or what life is going to look like after kids left or were out of the home. Some of those things were preconceived, right? Just like what happens for kids when you have a child, you put them in public school or, you know, private school. And when they get this age, then they go to college. So all these preconceived things that were handed to us about this is what you're supposed to do, that was handed to us as well when it comes to midlife. Okay, your kids are gone. Now you go on your vacations and you, like you said, take your little knitting circle and you go over here and you just be quiet now. You know, you've done all you needed to do. But I think we are obviously seeing that there's a vibrant community still to be had, or a vibrant life to be had in the middle years when our kids are older, and then when they don't need us as much anymore. So there's, with the research that I did about midlife, Sue, you made me think that maybe there's even more research or a pocket of people still to study, if you will, in after midlife. Like what is that time called, like in 60s and 70s, when, you know, there's still plenty of life left. And it is interesting to see sort of how that's going to shape up and evolve, because we are living longer, you know?
Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that our children and what we've, how old our children are, how many our children are, how we've homeschooled them does affect our later years. Mm-hmm. And that having that label, senior, midlife, it doesn't really, it just sounds so ordinary. I mean, to be described that way. You were talking, I think, in your last podcast, Erin, which I didn't quite finish because I fell asleep listening to it. I'm sorry, I'm going back, but identity, what's your identity and how that affects us as we're getting older. And that I was thinking that maybe our identity shouldn't really be based on our kids and what we're doing, but it should be separate. Well, like, I'm Sue, who has so many children. I'm Sue, who has unschooled so many children. I can be Sue the unschooler as the adult unschooler, but to have your identity stop with your children is maybe a crisis of midlife or the senior years, when you've identified yourself so closely with some phase of your life, which is beginning to end, and then you feel lost. I'm a career person and now I've retired and now I don't know who I am or what I want to do. And did you say, Missy, in your article or maybe I just made it up, about you spend all those years in a career maybe, or doing something that you are, you feel you have to do, you haven't thought about what you haven't had much control over. And then you find yourself at the other end and you look back and think, oh, I did all that and now I'm here. And I felt that with unschooling. If we weren't brave enough to unschool, and then I got to the end and I looked back and said, oh, we're here now. I regret all those years. What are we going to do now? And I think maybe the same way with adults, that we don't, maybe, well, not us, because I think we're all very confident and we take risks and we do what we feel is right for us. But maybe a lot of people, they're waiting to their older years before they give themselves permission to be and do who they want to be and to do what they want. Up to that point, they put themselves last. I'm a mother, I've got to homeschool, I've got to send my kids to school, I've got to do this job to earn money. And I feel very, very blessed that I've been the person I want to be all these years, though I've changed a lot over the years. I've had the freedom to do that, and I'm not looking back saying, I'm glad I'm here because now I no longer have to do all those things that I used to do. I'm sort of saying, where's the adventure going to take me next?
Yeah, so a few things, Sue, just jumping back to what is considered midlife. And I was thinking about this for myself because, I mean, I'm behind you, but I also am past that technical middle. You know, if you're looking at, you know, expected lifespans in Canada or whatever, I'm beyond it if I was to double my age. But then I thought, well, how do we think about this? Is midlife like the middle of our actual physical life, or is it the middle of our adulthood? And I feel like if I think of it as the middle of our adulthood, then that changes it a little bit. Right?
More of a technical term. I think midlife is not really like the middle of, like, so I'm 52, so it's not that I'm going to live to be 104. Yeah. It's more that it's the middle time of, like you're saying, the adulthood. So I think the midlife range is really like 40 to 60, 40 to 58-ish, something okay. around there. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, that makes more sense to me. I'd never really looked it up specifically, right? I think I'd always had in my mind that it was like, I don't know if it was something I heard as a kid, but that it was like 40 or something like that. And I mean, that could be true, but 40, I don't know, 40 still felt pretty young to, mm-hmm. still felt pretty young to me. But okay, that's interesting to hear you say that, Missy, because I've never really looked into it technically, right? So that's kind of, yeah. Oh, what was the other thing that I got thinking about? Oh my goodness. Oh, I think it was just around, it's a little bit of a paradox to me, because the other group of people that I find I am really getting a lot of like inspiration from watching are some of the friends and people that we know that actually haven't had kids. And I don't know, like I find that it's kind of interesting to watch the way that they live their lives, because they haven't had this chunk of time where they've maybe identified as a parent and dampened some of their own inspirations or some of their own interests. My husband has a couple friends in particular. Oh my goodness. Like the one guy, he lives life to the fullest. And I probably couldn't take quite the degree of, I mean, he's very extroverted and he's a different personality than I am. So it's not that I could really imagine myself doing the same kinds of things that he does, but I find it inspiring to watch how he just, like, he gets so much joy out of life. Like every day is joyful. And I think for us, we're probably saying the same thing, but there's a little bit something different about, it being joyful, but keeping other little people in mind all the time. There's some degree of dampening isn't the right word. I can't think of the right word, but there's something that gets a little bit tempered there. But just to watch him kind of, yeah, like live life, follow his passions, follow his interests. And there's just less inhibition there about really enjoying things. And so I've kind of been a little bit curious about that too, just watching people who have had a completely different path than I have and the way that they pursue their interests and their passions. The other thing that I wanted to say was that, you know, obviously when we're talking about unschooling, it seems like it relates just to school or not. That seems to make sense. But there are people who, whose kids are in school or maybe are in a lot of academia themselves or whatever, who still really embody that spirit as well of curiosity and exploring. So I don't know. I feel like as my kids have gotten older, especially these last couple of years, I'm more observant about this stuff. Like I'm just kind of watching like who's pursuing their interests and in what way. And like, I know this sounds silly, but it's kind of like, how do I even go about that? Because it's been a really busy, 25, 30 years for me. I'm turning 50 this year. And, you know, I've balanced paid work and parenting and homeschooling. And I remember being at the dentist one time and he asked me what I was reading. And I'm like, what I'm reading? Now, this was when my kids were younger. And I'm thinking of kids' books or novels. Like there was just a period of my life when my kids were younger that I couldn't even think about. Or maybe I was reading something, but it probably wouldn't be something that I would strike up much of a conversation about. So I feel like I'm looking to other people a little bit, just in an observational sort of way to think like, how do I even pursue my interests? Like, what does that look like for people? It feels like a real learning curve for me right now, just to like even figure out how to take time for myself and then what to do with that time.
Well, and I think there's that, there's fear that happens naturally in life, but then there's the fear that gets compounded by the reality of our aging bodies and our aging family members and the transitions that happen naturally, but then also that happen because you are older. You lose people or job loss or some sort of financial insecurity. So Sue, you mentioned what I had written in there. It wasn't me specifically I was talking about. It was more like what the experiences of people have been in terms of getting to a point in their lives where they go, okay, you know, it's like their soul is not having it anymore. Like they just have to stop doing this soul sucking job or this particular relationship or where they're living, or it's just, they finally get to a point where it's like a tipping point. So that's where the whole idea of a crisis is, that was thrown around back in the 60s. And then I had looked at it at some point, not necessarily the crisis of I'm upset with where I've been, but it's also just a crisis of the fact that life has thrown a bunch of challenging things at you simultaneously. So the idea that you live longer, you're going to have more experiences, period. You know, that's just facts. But then you're also going to have more potentially challenging experiences because of all the different things that are happening in your body, in your family, in your general society. So I was just thinking how with, in tying it back to the unschooling mentality of, we keep things open, options open for our kids. We don't shut doors for them. So we shouldn't shut doors for ourselves. And then we also should practice less rigidity. So because we've gotten older doesn't mean automatically that you say to yourself that you can or can't do something. So that's the other piece of this time of my life where I feel that I'm revisiting those same sort of values that I really held on to with my children, that I have to allow those same values for myself, you know, at this time in our life.
Mm. Yeah, I agree with so much of what you've both said. And I found when I was reading your article, Missy, that it made me think about the whole idea of two seemingly opposite things being true at the same time. And I was kind of thinking about how on the one hand, you have a lovely quote. I don't know if I wrote it down. Something about embracing life as an adventure and living life in the present. And And I was thinking how, you know, how unschooling helps us to do that. I think that's what you were talking about. And I was thinking, yeah, I really resonate with that and agree. But then also I was thinking, I also had this sense of, I don't know, maybe a few years ago, fairly recently, I guess. But that sense of suddenly almost looking up and thinking, oh my goodness, I've had my head down looking after children for the last 25 years. And then suddenly I kind of had this sense, I guess it was because one of my children left home to go to university. And that made me think, I guess you reflect on your own mortality, you reflect on how fast all this goes, you, like you've been saying, things like financial concerns, I guess, and yeah, and just physically feeling your age sometimes. And it was kind of, yeah, it's kind of weird how those two things were true, if that makes sense. That idea that I hadn't missed it, because I feel like I have been very present, and I'm so glad and grateful and feel very, yeah, so privileged every day to think about how much time I've actually had with my children, that I feel like if they'd gone to school, I wouldn't necessarily have had all the amazing adventures that we've had. And I wouldn't have, I mean, I still feel like I don't, I mean, I've still got an 11-year-old at home. So that's lovely. I've got, you know, a 25-year-old and an 11-year-old and then two people in between. and I still feel like I don't spend enough time with my children, even though I know that to some of my friends would be like, don't, you know, that's crazy. How can you say that? And I guess it's just because, you know, I just want more and more, I guess. But it, yeah, so I don't feel like I've missed it. I feel like I have been present. But then on the other hand, I also get this sense of suddenly waking up to a different life. I don't know if that makes sense or not.
Yeah. I'm writing stuff, you know, how Ashley, I'm taking lessons from Ashley because she takes notes, and I need to do that because I'm always trying to remember what I wanted to say. So, okay, let's see if I can make sense of this now. So Missy, in talking about the fact of, you know, maybe our lifespans seem to be longer at this point than they were, you know, decades ago, certainly centuries ago. And so we also have, like, what I'm thinking about in my own life right now, we have, how can I put it? There's, it's like, I think that as, I don't know if it's just a natural thing as humans, or maybe it's the era that I grew up in, but I always felt like there was kind of a blueprint. There was this, there was that. You do this, you do that. And it's that it might take me a while to find the answer to something about kind of how to do a certain part of life, but that there was an answer out there. I just would be, you know, I had to find the right person or the right book or whatever. And I'm finding now that there isn't a blueprint. There's not a blueprint for the senior years, even as far as the decisions that we might be making alongside our aging parents or aging in-laws, like even those parts of life don't have an absolute to me anymore. I'm noticing, and I think it's kind of scary, but I also think it's good. In our society here in Canada, we've got so much going on the last few years with the high cost of living. It's completely different than it was even like less than 10 years ago. And then you have, you know, baby boomers, huge population of baby boomers. And things are different as far as how people are living and what people can afford to do and what people are doing. And the exciting part of that for me is that I'm seeing more creative, kind of creative cooperation between families, more intergenerational living. But it does feel, I mean, not that intergenerational living is new, but it's a little bit new for my generation. That isn't, you know, it wasn't so common for us. And so I guess, where am I even going with this? I guess as lifespans are longer, we have potentially, you know, more thinking to do about our parents and our in-laws. And then also things are changing as far as what adulthood looks like for our kids, because it's just different. Some of it's not great. Some of it's really promising. A lot of it's confusing. And I find myself in a position where I've got a lot of thinking to do right now. I like both ends of the spectrum, and I don't really know what my role is with anybody. And that's okay. And I wonder if that's maybe part of the piece about unschooling, is that we're sort of maybe a little bit more used to other people than other people of kind of not knowing. And I think there was a line in there somewhere, Missy, around that. I can't remember what it was, but it's just, we can't control the outcomes of our kids. And we know that, I think, and maybe in a way that it takes other people longer to come to, because we've let go of some of that control in a different way from the beginning. And I feel like I'm going round and round with this, but hopefully it makes some sense. I feel like we can transfer that to our aging parents and even to aging friends and ourselves as we kind of go along this path, that there's not this like blueprint, and it's scary that there's not a blueprint, but it's also exciting that there's not a blueprint. And I think it takes some courage. And then Sue, I'm just going to briefly, along the word courage, there's a piece in your book, and I had written it in the notes before we'd started, the Unschool Challenge. And this is like a literal type of courage, but it reminded me of this. I think you were running and it started to rain, and there's a line in there where you talk about you're strong. Like I can't remember if it's about running in the rain or what it is, but what stood out to me was the idea, like there was a moment where you doubted what you were going to do or whether you were going to continue with the run. And then you had a moment where you were like, well, no, I'm strong. My body's strong. My will is strong. I'm going to do this. And I feel like that's a little bit related to, even though you're talking about a physical experience, it's still that same courage and tenacity that I think we've all probably built in one way or another. So anyway, kind of like two different things, but they feel a little bit connected to me.
When we look ahead in our lives, say we start off when we're young and we look to the next stage, we're going to grow up, we're going to get a job, we might get married, we might have children, we might be grandparents. But when you get to the last stage, there's not, you sort of think of lovely things that are going to happen. Some of those things are exciting. You know, you're going to get married and have a lovely wedding, and you're going to have children, and it's all going to be wonderful. But when you get to the later years after children, you don't hear any positive stories. It's the words associated with that period of life are things like gray, fragile, weak, feeble. And even though our bodies, I think people's bodies do become feeble more quick on the average, not because some people are different, but on the average, I think that a lot of older people let their bodies become feeble too soon by not exercising, by accepting, slipping into old age is what I think of it. Not keeping up with, maybe sort of giving up and saying, oh, I deserve to rest now because I'm older. And the old age, that title, that label, older people don't do this, so that's okay if I don't run. It's okay if I don't keep up with, do a bit of strength exercises. And I've seen so many people just slide into old age prematurely because they're old and there's no positive, well, they think they're old, but that's the label. And there's not this vision that you have with younger people, and you're not inspired to. And I think that you were talking about, I'm not sure the person you were talking about earlier, who started the multi-billion company at the age of 60 or whatever. But those role models, again, the examples that we could follow, they're inspiring and they give us a different vision. And those are the sort of conversations which really make us realize that we don't have to accept the traditional view of what it is to be middle-aged to senior, that we're still a lot of things we can do and get involved with. And even if our bodies are feeble, our minds might not be. And the way to keep our minds active is to keep on using them. And so, yeah, I think there's not a lot of good role models in our communities for that. I would say online you can go looking for people like that to follow, and to get inspired by, maybe there's books and someone will say, hey, you should read this book and it's really inspiring. It's about somebody your age who's done wonderful things. But personally, I haven't come across many people like that in my day-to-day lives. Even the people I grew up, when I say grew up with, the people, yeah, well, the people I went through the homeschooling years with, not unschoolers, they're all slipping into, well, I'm needing for my grandchildren and I'm looking after the grandchildren, and I meet them and I'll say, well, what are you doing for yourself? What are your interests? Oh, I'm looking after the grandchildren. And I think there's nothing wrong with that, but to focus your whole life around your children's children in some ways is limiting what are still the things we could do. And also it's very much like controlling your kids. And I feel there's a danger there of, this is someone talking, has no grandchildren, of course, so I don't really know. And I would love to have some grandchildren, but I don't ever see my life, my identity being a grandmother. I will always be there to love and to support and to care, but my identity won't be grandmother. It'll still be Sue, who likes to look after her grandchildren. If you expect, yeah, the possibilities. I don't know where I didn't until I got to this stage, my view of what my older years would be like was pretty dismal. I didn't want to get here. And it was sort of, that was pre-unschooling. Unschooling has, it's caught up with me. I sometimes think, I can't be as old as I am. No, there's no way. I'm still fit. I'm still, got my mind still going. I still want to do stuff. Oh, someone's made a mistake. I'm not as old as I am. So I don't feel as old as I am. But I think I would have done without unschooling if I had, well, maybe, you know. I wonder who I would have been if without unschooling and without the experience of my kids and what they have taught me about life. Because I think that that's a real blessing as well, isn't it? How you were talking about your friends, Erin, who haven't got children and they've had more time to pursue their interests. But our kids have taught us so much. We wouldn't be the same people we are today if it hadn't been for our children. And so even though there's difficult times and we put ourselves last, well, that teaches us something, doesn't it? And their enthusiasm, their wonder, their awe, their curiosity, we're all swept ahead in that as a family, as people. And yeah, I wouldn't be the same person if I hadn't had my children. Maybe I would, well, I don't know if I'd be curious. What would I have done, Erin? I threw all my books out. I got a job I didn't really enjoy because I did a university degree I didn't really enjoy. I think I would have got stuck. I wouldn't have known what to do next to bring myself growth and happiness. I don't know. Yeah. I really don't know where I'd have been.
I think that on a practical level, the number of like places and things that we have been introduced to because of spending time and doing those things with our kids. Like, I just mean things like art galleries and conservation areas and hiking trails and live theater, like just different books and games. Like, it's definitely opened. I definitely have a very big, and I'm sure you all do too, like repertoire of different things to kind of pull from and be interested in. And I'm always fascinated when I'm talking to somebody, so many people will say to me, oh, I, like, if I mention the library, oh, I can't think of the last time I've been to the library. I'm like, oh my God, like, because the library for us was such a staple, to the point that I still love to wander through the picture book area. And the, like, I haven't lost that interest, but I think, like, just on a very practical level, the repertoire of things that I think we become introduced to because we are trying to spread this feast, to borrow a Charlotte Mason term, of different things for our kids to be interested in. And we're also following our children's lead on things that we would never have probably known about or been interested in. And so now I find I'll tune into something or I'll be interested in something. And I wouldn't be able to tell you is that my, would I have had that interest without my child? Am I, it doesn't matter anymore, right? Because they've introduced me to something that I've been able to dig a little bit deeper into. But something that you said, Sue, and it kind of harkens back a little bit to Sue, you were talking about the idea earlier of identity, and then you were talking about this last bit here about like grandparenting. And so it's not that you wouldn't love your grandchildren, but you don't want that to be your sole identity. And I am interested in that identity piece. You know, Haley, even you saying that it's like you can't get enough, you know, you want all this time to spend with your children. And I think it's interesting because I think at some point that isn't so much, I might be putting words in your mouth, but that isn't so much about your identity as a mother. It's about the relationship you've built with your kids. And I think that that's part of what I'm kind of sorting through right now. I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm kind of interested in it. I do have this real drive to stay connected with my kids and spend time with my kids. But I think that in some circles that would sound maybe like I'm being overbearing, or I'm, you know, like I can't let go, or I can't let go of my identity. But I don't think it's about my identity. I think it's about these really great people that I just kind of enjoy. Missy, I don't know, like you can probably relate to that too, as they get older. I mean, not that you don't enjoy your younger kids, but as they're older, it's like you actually kind of get a rapport with them that you like to hang out and spend time together, not because you're the mother, but because you just have a relationship with them.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes, for sure. I was going to add to about the questioning and as unschoolers, that's been huge for us. Like, why is that a rule? And why is that the status? And why do we have to do it that way? And so I think keeping those questions alive as we roll into a new time of our lives, as we transition, to not be resistant to transitions as well, because, you know, sometimes we have it in our mind how it's supposed to look, like we were talking about earlier. And then so because in our mind's eye, it's supposed to look a certain way, then we become extremely resistant to it. And if anything, we start feeling maybe resentful or possibly depressed about things not being the way we thought it was going to be. And I think that is an important part to keep sort of front and center in our own minds and in our psyches, you know. And I mentioned that when I was writing, is that, you know, it's not just a physical transition, but it's a psychological transition too, because all of the things we were striving for when we were in our younger years, whether it's, you know, the career, the marriage, the family, the stability in a home. And then if any of that starts shifting, then some people may interpret that as being like we failed somehow, when in fact it might just be a natural transition that is happening because of multiple things that you could have never predicted. So that whole idea of trying to not be so rigid, and also to keep your questions going, because that, I think questions are bridges for us, and they get us to that next step. So if we can, well, why do I feel this way about this particular time in my life? Or why am I showing resistance here? Or what is it about this change that is making me feel these particular ways? And, you know, the research that I had done was pretty scary in a way, you know, that it was like the number of people in the midlife range who were, you know, dealing with depression and sleep problems and physical ailments and suicide and suicidal ideation. So it's just like, wow, there's so much of this heaviness that people face. And I think that could, it's important to understand that that could be possibly on the horizon for people, but it can also help you become better armed in preparation for that time, or if you're there now, to see, to say, well, why are those things happening, and what are the supports that I need to put in place? And, you know, we had to do that with our kids when we first started homeschooling. If we were stepping out of the norm, we had to come up with our own sort of plan about how are we going to support ourselves outside of the norm. And so you can take what you learned early on, what you were doing with your kids, and sort of transfer that now to your own life with all the changes and potential transitions that you're facing, or that might come about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's, I think that's so interesting, Missy. One of the first things I wrote, or the first thing I wrote down when I was reading your article, was you said something about midlife presenting like a unique set of challenges. And what was it, experiences and transitions. And I was thinking, well, that's just the same as home education or unschooling, basically, isn't it? And the same as childhood and being a parent and all those things. And you mention in the article as well about wonder, about keeping wonder alive. And I was thinking when you were just talking then about how, you know, obviously it is, people are facing really difficult things like depression and illness and worrying about their own financial situation or their children's financial situation and all those things. The more that we can, the more we can wonder about those things and ask the questions, like you said, rather than falling into the sort of worry pattern, then the stronger, the stronger and the more potential we have, I guess, for finding, I don't know, keeping that curiosity alive. We can see it from different point of views rather than getting steeped in that worry thing. But one of the things you said, Sue, about us not necessarily having a lot of people to be inspired by, I was also thinking when I read your article, Missy, about the shame, that the kind of idea of a midlife crisis, that stereotype of people getting fast cars and wearing clothes that are too young for them. And I was thinking, in some ways, that's maybe those people are the ones who have the adventurous spirit, and they're the ones who are still curious. And that's why I said at the beginning about how I don't feel it's necessarily individual people. There's a lot of societal pressure, I think, isn't there, on keeping people it's almost like that image of a midlife crisis would actually put individual people off from being curious, and or at least letting that curiosity show to the world. It's that. Almost like society's, keep trying to keep us down.
Yeah, it's like stay in your lane. You're here, you're this age, this is what you need to be doing right now. So if you do anything outside of it, we call it a crisis, when in fact, maybe that's them actually going, oh my gosh, I'm done. You know, like I'm stripping away all these expectations that were placed on me. And so maybe it's not a crisis as much as it is an awareness, you know, to coming full circle to say, okay, I'm taking action now. So some people might put the word crisis on it, because they do see that there's some negative side effects to people coming into an acceptance of something they want to change. So sure, crisis can definitely happen, but maybe it's not as much of a crisis as it is an awakening and of like I'm switching gears now. I'm taking an active role in the rest of my life.
And it made me think as well about sometimes this idea of grandparents giving very different treatment and very different advice to their grandchildren than they might give to their children. And I wonder if sometimes that is also about people. I mean, there are so many videos, aren't there, on YouTube and stuff about advice from people of a certain age. And it's almost like, I can't remember which one of you was saying this, but it's almost like once you get to a certain age, maybe there's then permission for you not to be, you can throw off or you start questioning, like we've gone, you know, like we're all going through this continual deschooling, that maybe for some people it is when they get to a certain age that they begin that deschooling process and they start thinking, actually I haven't met, you know, it's really morbid, but maybe I don't have that much time left, so maybe I'm not going to be restrained by those old ideas that aren't really serving me, and I'm going to give my grandchildren the advice that maybe I would have liked to have given to my children if I didn't feel like society was going to think me a bad parent if I told my children that. Yeah. Whereas and maybe I couldn't let my children watch as much telly or have as many sweets, or I don't know, just be more relaxed with my children because I ought to be a good parent. Whereas when I'm a grandparent, I can lean into what their interests are a bit more and be, I can be more fun because I am not constrained by the societal rules anymore. I don't know. It's a thought I had.
Yeah, I think that, well, I live in an area where it's a tourist area where a lot of older people come to retire. So there's a lot of retirement, I say homes, you know, like complexes where you get you buy yourself a lovely little villa, and they're all very lovely and beyond my price range, but there's lots of them. We have an older population. I'm just growing into the population because we got here when I was a young mum and we've lived here a long time. But all around the place, there are these signs saying, luxury living for 55 plus, or exercise for the over 55s. And it's like almost when you hit that age, you need a special little group for yourself, for your exercise, and you need to be separated off and live in a retirement home. And I have fun with my husband, you know, we're past that age now, and we say, oh, you know, we're old enough to go and live in one of those luxury retirement villas now. And a few years ago it was, do you think they'll take all the kids as well? And it's just that expectation that this is the age where you're supposed to slow down and think about your retirement. And I would have said 75 maybe, but 55? I mean, I'm well past 55 now, and I'm still going strong. I think, what would they think of me if I rolled up to the 55-plus exercise class? The exercise where you sit on the chair and just, you know, and I'm sure some people do have physical problems, and I'm not saying that... I'm not saying that they shouldn't have exercise for people who are not as mobile as other people, but the average 55-year-old is not ready to be regarded as old. That's my opinion, anyway.
Well, it goes back to the age brackets again. You know, I mean, we segregate kids, babies, kids. You know, all throughout public school, and we're segregating the older population. So it's kind of like, you know, you're at this age now, these are the things you need to be focused on or care about. You know, mm-hmm. And I laugh because we have all those around here too, Sue, like the 55 plus. I'm like, oh, I'm 2 years or 3 years away. You know, I can get over there. I just said 2 years. I can do 3 years. I got 3 years to think about that. And to me, that feels like, no, I'm not even close to interested in that sort of world. But yeah, again, I don't know. I just think our society really has a problem with age segregation.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think segregation at 55 is not really the later end, but you know what I mean, not children. So much of it is based around the idea of retiring and retirement. And I think you had brought this up earlier, maybe, Sue, this idea of like, look, I've done my bit, I've worked, and now I'm going to rest. And like, to a degree, I get that. Like, I do understand that. But I wonder, you know, what are the differences for that between people who maybe worked in a job for many years that was really unfulfilling to them, and they just kind of had to slog away at it, versus someone who had a more meaningful, you know, more meaningful work. And I, you know, sometimes that's just circumstance, but sometimes it is mindset. And so it's interesting to me just to think about, you know, what that whole word retirement, is it just about kind of, for some people it's rest. I think for other people, it's like, now I get to actually do what I wanted to do. And those are the people that maybe do a lot of travel or, you know, those kinds of things. But I do think it's very dependent on, what the 55 to 65 years have looked like for us individually prior to that, how we kind of frame that in our own minds. So it might make sense for some people, but yeah, it's pretty standardized. It's not going to make sense for everybody. I just wanted, while we still have some, hopefully a decent amount of time here, or a little bit of time, I just wanted to connect in a little bit about the idea of striving and productivity, because Sue and Missy, you've both mentioned that in different ways in your writing. So Missy, in this particular article that we're talking about today, speaking of midlife, I should have made my font a little bit bigger. But anyway, I think I can manage. So it says, from childhood onward, we are in take life by the reins mode. In our modern hustle culture, there's promise, possibility, and stuff to do. I love that. It does feel like that. Stuff to do. And then you say life is busy and exciting and challenging and adventurous. And then you say we are striving. And I feel that so much. It's like all these years of I do this so that I can get to this. And then I need to do this so that I can get to this. And it feels like there's this linear path that somebody has laid for us. Maybe that person I'm looking for that has the answers to the, there's just like this elusive answer out there. And then Sue, in the Unschool Challenge, you were talking about kind of your experience through your life with the idea of needing to be productive. So you say, when I was a child, I always felt I should be doing something worthwhile. I couldn't just sit and dream, watch TV, or read a book for hours on end. I had to be productive and not waste time. Often I heard, isn't there something better you could be doing? As an adult, I've discovered that, in quotes, wasting time is valuable. We learn a lot by doing such things as watching movies, playing video games, chatting over coffee, and reading comic books and magazines, don't we? And I just, like, I can relate to both of those points so much. I do remember, like, feeling like if I was relaxing, I was getting away with something. And I still feel a little bit that way. I mean, Haley, we've talked about this on the podcast before. I think in the context of you relaxing with a novel or something like that, and your kids have had to remind you, like, it's okay, Mom. You know, but it's just that of almost like, oh, I'm not doing anything that's productive right now, or I'm not striving, or I'm not whatever. So I was just really kind of struck by that, and how, I guess I'd be interested to see, how does that get worked into our subconscious somehow, that we just almost don't know how to pause and take time? Because I have noticed the last year or so, maybe a little bit more than that, a level of just really exhaustion is too, it's not quite at the point of exhaustion. But like, I am tired, not in like an aging way, but in a, just that I would like to start to find ways to, to learn how not to be striving all the time, to relax a little bit more. And I have been doing more of that, but it is still this feeling of like, well, why am I tired? Like, and feeling like I have to have a reason for it, for wanting to rest, or for feeling like I need to nap a little bit more than I wouldn't have had a chance, I guess, at a certain points of my life. But yeah, I'm just so curious about how that gets kind of like embedded into us. And then what we do with that when we don't have young kids anymore, not that we're not still busy, but it's not the same thing as having a child that you have to watch over from like a safety perspective or a,
I don't know if this is a theory of mine about our desire to do. I think it's just built into us as human beings, because we had to do so much for our survival. And so we live in societies now that cater to us in so many ways, and we don't have to do all the things we used to have to do to survive. So we have a lot of extra time on our hands, technically. And so I think there's a lot more opportunity for rest. Yet we kind of have this like weird guilt about it because we're not doing something. And I don't know if that's just like a leftover thing from from many, many, many years of us having to strive and do and be productive for actual life to live and to survive, you know, and of course, it wasn't that long ago that once you were born into a family, you had a place and you had a responsibility and you had jobs to do. You didn't have to worry about where do I fit in. It was like, you, here's where you fit in. And, you know, there was a belonging and a sense of meaning to your life, even if it wasn't, you were doing what you wanted to do from that kind of like soul perspective. But you still felt like you had an important part to play to keep your family alive and to keep your whole, you know, to keep yourself fed. So, you know, as time has gone on, we've thankfully been able to let go of a lot of that. So we have this space to fill. And I don't know. I don't know if that's really what it is, but it just, that feels like a logical theory to say that we have this extra time on our hands. And so there's this weird guilt that we have because we're like not helping our families survive, you know? And so that's why we almost, now I normalize naps in my family now. So I'm just like, bye, see y'all. I'm going to take a nap. And I want my kids to see that, you know, that you can rest. And then they'll see me rested and recharged and boom, I'm out, you know, cleaning the whole house, top to bottom. So they get to see that cycle of what it's naturally like to, you know, be an adult.
Mm-hmm. I like that idea of the cycle that we can't be at the high productivity level all the time, that we need those troughs in between to rest and to think and to dream and to recharge ourselves before we're ready to go again. And I felt that I recognize that in myself, that I have days where I just need to sit and read a book or watch a few TV programs on my, you know, computer. Because I don't watch TV anymore because I can't work out how to use the all the settings. It's terrible to admit, isn't it? At my age, I've forgotten how to use all the settings on the TV and the DVD player, but I can create a blog and work out how to do a lot of tech problems online. But when you put that thing in front of me at home, I think, oh, it's just easier to direct stream something on my computer. So that's what I do. But I don't feel guilty about having those days. But I do feel, personally for myself, I need to feel productive overall. That I need to feel that I have a purpose in life and that I have something important to contribute to the overall, the big conversation, and that that if I just knitted every day, or I mean, I like knitting. I've mentioned it a couple of times, so I wouldn't want to do it every day. It's sort of thing that you do at the end of the day. But if I feel like getting older, a lot of old people they lose their place in the world, because they feel they haven't got a purpose anymore. And I think we all just have so many talents and skills. Doesn't matter how old we get, we can still keep using them. And they actually, our skills and talents increase as we get older, and maybe we become more valuable, and that we need some way of sharing those with the rest of the world. And that's why I guess all of us, we are all blogging and we're all out there sharing what we have gained over the past years about unschooling, because we feel this need to not just to stay quietly at home and just sort of see to our kids and then slide out the other end into our retirements, but this is important to us. And there are certain things which, for everybody, this might not be what's important for everybody, but everybody has something that is important to them that they want to share. And we can see that with our kids, that I have noticed that when I have a child who has a different interest to me, but I'm willing to share that interest and to get involved with, I don't know, an exercise class that I particularly wouldn't do on my own, my child just sort of comes alive. That participation, that she's been able to give something to me, or to go out and run a race. I do a 5K run with all these other people, and to be part of the community still. Our kids love it, and I think we need that as well, regardless of what age we are. And as Missy said, it's a matter of coming up the cycle, falling down into the trough, going up to a peak again, to balance that. And there's nothing wrong with resting, And there's nothing wrong also with working towards a goal and having goals. I've written quite a bit about drifting. That's what I thought unschooling was. You just drifted through your days. And it took a long time before I gave my permission to myself to actually start planning a few things, to get through a few goals. I want to get this book written. I'm not just going to get up and drift. I'm going to set it out. What am I going to do today? I'm going to work on a chapter of my book. But then you get up one day, and as you said, Erin, you feel really tired, and you give yourself permission to do something low-key to gain your energy back. Or you get stuck on something, but you haven't got any, or you get stuck on a chapter and you can't write anymore. And I know a lot of people say just push on through, but mostly I don't. I go and do a different activity and then come back to it renewed in my energy. But it may be a balance.
I feel like one of the beautiful things about unschooling, which I'm sure is familiar to all of us here, is, and I thought about this when I was reading your bit about striving, Missy, that the experience of having a child learn to read, or maybe toilet training, or some of those things that society tells us are really hard, I'm sure we're all familiar with the fact that often in unschooling families, those things happen perhaps at a different time to what society says they ought to happen at, but they often seem to happen in a much more gentler way, much less of a kind of hassle way. And I was thinking about that, the idea of not necessarily having to push hard and put lots of effort into do. Sometimes our effort actually comes from us trying not to do, trying to hold ourselves back from because we want to provide those conditions where these things happen more gently, more naturally, without so it's not necessarily a case that we need to push, you know, the idea of a child learning to read in school is lots and lots of drills, isn't it? And lots of practice and repetition. And whereas, you know, sometimes in unschooling families, or often in unschooling families, what we find is that if we provide the conditions for those skills to flourish naturally at the time that is right for the individual child, then we don't have to go for all that kind of hassle, hard effort, striving that perhaps society tells us that we have to, you know, that it's not going to happen unless we're kind of drill. That's not our experience generally, is it, when we're living in this kind of way? And on the other thing it made me think about was when you were saying, Erin, earlier about it not being about my identity as a mother wanting to spend more time with my children. It's about, you're right, it's about the relationships with these people who I really want to spend time with. And I was thinking that's another thing that unschooling gives us, I think, is that family culture of continuing to learn and the kind of strewing for each other, that being enthusiastic about what everybody is learning in the family and people sharing what they're up to. And, you know, that, you know, text messages with, oh, I've been doing this, I bet you'd like this, mum, or, you know, or to a brother or a sister or whatever, this is, you know, I've seen this and think you'd be really interested in it. That's a very big part of our daily lives, isn't it, as unschoolers? And I think that just continues. It doesn't stop because they don't need to be registered anymore, or you know, they've come to a certain age. It continues, doesn't it? And I think that's, I was just thinking of two of the things that I feel like unschooling has given me, are those two things.
Well, I wanted to continue that thought, because while you were talking, it just made me realize the connection between heading into a different point in life and seeing it as, so when I started homeschooling my kids, I didn't have anybody in my family who did that, right? So it was a brand new territory for me. And so what I knew was what I had been taught in my teaching program, and then what I had seen and what I personally experienced. So I was forging a new trail. The same is true for me being in midlife. I only know what I experienced watching my parents, watching my husband's parents, watching everybody else around me who've gotten to this point before me. So I'm trying to blaze another new trail by seeing this time of my life not as a time to be like, okay, I'm folding everything up now. I'm turning all of this time over to my kids. Now they're the ones that are in charge. It's their life now that we need to really, really pour into. I've done what I needed to do. It's more like, hey, I'm this age, but I'm not stopping. You know, I still have stuff to do, things to accomplish, ideas that I want to try out, places I want to go. So it's and also that family piece too, which forging those relationships early on, my hope is that those relationships will continue to stay strong as I go into this different part of my life. And I'm always going to be their cheerleader, and I'm cheering them on right now. They each go in their different directions. But what I love about it is that they're cheering me on too, you know, and they're seeing the things I want to do, and they're like, go do it. You know, it's exciting, new. I think that whole experience from the earlier years of unschooling, where I had to take those risks and forge a new path for myself and my kids, I'm doing that now in this part of my life. And I think it's about that flexibility, asking questions, staying curious, making sure you're checking in with yourself. What is it that you need? What are you interested in? Where's your wonder? Okay, follow it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Missy, was there anything when you were doing this research that really surprised you? I was a little bit surprised, just I guess, about the suicidal ideation and some of those different things. I know what happens for lots of people. I have people close to me. I'm just from a statistical standpoint, was it surprising to you was there anything that kind of stuck out for you when you were reading?
I think that definitely the suicidal part, because like I said, I had gotten some mixed information. Like some studies were saying, you know, that it's no different in midlife than any other part. You can look at the numbers and you're going to have like a bell-shaped curve, right? Pretty much everywhere. But I think it was that Economica paper, because they looked at Australia, England, and the US. So here we are, these, you know, three large places that are economically comfortable, and yet you have this huge uptick in those particular years of people struggling. And so, you know, what exactly is the underlying reason for that? And that is the question mark. It's like, what is it? So that's where I think it, for me personally, I feel like it goes back to those expectations and the fact that people were told that this is how you're supposed to live your life, and this is the template you need to follow, and if you do that, you're going to be okay. And then they get to a point in their lives and they're not okay, you know, and so somebody somewhere along the line, they feel like they've been lied to, or they've been misled, or, you know, I would love to look at the specifics of all that information, but that wasn't an option.
What's so interesting to me about that, a couple things, because you've just said something that similar to what I've brought up a couple times, is this idea of like what people told them or what they understood. And so it's like there's this inner cultural idea of like the path, or, you know, how you're told. And so, you know, I think that that's another way that can be that we're probably in a good position, in the sense of, you know, not necessarily having followed a conventional path, we're maybe a little more used to questioning some of those things. I mean, it relates back a little bit to what you said, Haley, too, around with our kids. We've seen it with our kids. And so that disappointment of, well, this didn't turn out like they told me it would, might be a little bit different or a little bit less for us. I did just want, something's popped up for me just sitting here kind of thinking about things that I think is unique in, so I think it could have the potential to be actually more challenging for not necessarily unschooling, but homeschooling families in general. And yet I have a feeling that our way of kind of moving through things might be a little bit different. But I just wanted to touch on the financial end of things, because I think partly because of the choices that a lot of homeschool families make to center their kids and their kids' education and family life over, not necessarily always over careers, but often over a second career. And even if there is a second career, it's usually there's usually a lot of consideration about family life there. So there's probably not, you know, people aren't doing quite the things they would do if their kids were in daycare or were in school. So I think it's an interesting thing to be arriving at this point of life. And maybe, you know, if you had parents who both worked full time, or if you have friends who have done that, you're coming into this era of life in a different financial situation. So even if you're okay, you're not like, I feel okay, but when I hear about some of the things that other people my age are doing, I'm like, right, because I made this decision for a minute. I'm like, wait, something's wrong here. How are they doing all this? And then I'm like, nope, we made a different choice. We made a different choice, and we worked contracts around her, and we did this differently. And I think that that's worth just mentioning, because we are coming, and we're coming into midlife, maybe looking ahead to retirement. Aside from what we've chosen to do with our time thus far, it's more difficult economically pretty much everywhere than it was probably when our parents were the same age, or the, you know, so it's a different ball game, which shakes it up, which is always good. I mean, that's okay. That's what we do, right? We respond to things being shaken up, and we figure it out. But I just wanted to say that, because I mean, there really is no blueprint in that.
I'm glad you mentioned it. I'm glad you brought it up, because honestly, I was driving down the road the other day, just kind of thinking about this, and I was like, oh my gosh. I mean, so I have some girlfriends that I've grew up with for many, many, many years, and they did things very differently than I have done things. And I was like, here we are. We're getting ready to be in this transition time of our lives, and it's going to look different again, because they're going to all be going to retirement, and I'm going to be going back into finding something to do financially, you know? And I was like, that's just so interesting, and that's okay, you know? But that's the thing that's so interesting about it, is I have the energy to do it, because I want to now, because my kids are good, you know? And so it's like, I have skills and I have ideas, and so there's things I want to pursue, and I'm glad that I can do that now and didn't have to depend on that, you know, full time when they were growing up. So it's just an interesting transition. So it's like, you know, the same thing. I'm going to be seeing people on boats and trips and whatever, you know, taking these big extravagant vacations, and I'll be like, see ya, have fun.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it, exactly. And I think, you know, what I'm noticing for myself is I can still, I mean, I have to work at it, but I can still be happy for people, you know? I'm like, yeah, like, you sacrificed a lot in a different way. And this is, you know, you see people doing things that they've worked toward and they enjoy. But yeah, I just thought it was worth bringing it up, because it is a different, you're right, it's like, once again, it's a little different, or quite different. I just have one other thing on my mind. I don't know. Does anybody else? I'm not in a rush either, though. Does anybody else have anything to mention, or anything you were thinking of before I mention mine? No, we're good. Okay. There was a quote here. Missy, you say, it can be frightening to realize that you have lived a large portion of your life according to someone else's plan, and your soul is not having it anymore. And I loved that, because I do think that there's something that happens to people. I mean, I'm generalizing here, but maybe getting into their 40s, or, you know, possibly, that there is a sense, and I don't know, I can only speak as a woman, but I notice this with a lot of women, that there's a sense where they're like, wait a minute. There's just something that almost, it doesn't feel like a decision anymore. It feels like, oh, I want to do this with my life, or I'm done with this, or it just feels, it's almost like your soul makes the decision for you, which is what I kind of took from your wording. And I guess I just wanted to say that as much as we've been talking a lot about interests and passions and pursuing different things, whether it's, you know, career or physical activity and those kinds of things, something else that's come up a lot for me around this idea of not having it anymore is really reflecting on the more nuanced things. So not necessarily like a big goal, but what are the, like, what do I say yes and no to with people anymore, right? So it might be invitations out. It might be people asking you for a favor. And, you know, for me, I've just kind of been a yes person my whole life. And I hope to continue to be a yes person. But I've been aware the last few years that I have been working on finding where my no's are as well. And that's been a big thing for me, I think, where I just came to a point in my I guess for me, it's been my 40s, but I've heard lots of people say the same thing where it's just like, I don't know. That's why am I still doing this? Or why am I saying yes to this? Or why am I not saying no to this? Or why am I pretending I'm okay with this? So I just wanted to say that because I think it's a little bit less obvious maybe than pursuing your dreams or whatever, but it's, there's something about midlife where that's a big piece as well. And to tie it into the unschooling piece, and I guess parenting, really, the challenge for me is to really, how can I articulate this? To really hear my kids' no's as well, not no to me, but no to other people. So it's like I've been learning it alongside my kids as they've kind of been, you know, teenagers and getting into their adult years. And I see them forming their own, you know, just boundaries and preferences around things that really also kind of, I don't even think I eased into it. I would say catapulted me into going, oh, I need to respect, like, they're really good at knowing what they want and they don't want. And I need to respect them. So what would that even look like in me? So it's like they learned it before I did.
I've watched them interact sometimes and I'm like, the way I was raised or the way I grew up in the public school system, you know, there were a lot of things that I bit my tongue and I didn't say things or I just went along to get along, you know, that kind of stuff. But they don't do that. They just say what they need to say, and not in a mean way and not in a rude way. But sometimes when they do say it so strongly, I feel like they're saying it to me, but they're not. And then they'll just keep going about their way with their friends. Everything's great. And I'm like, wow, that's what that looked like. You know, they really just stood up for themselves or were very clear about what they were not going to do. And I'm over here going, is that a little too rough? And they just laugh at me like, Mom, just, they're good. You know, I'm like, okay, you're good.
Yeah.
So, amazing how, you know, watching that unfold in them through their relationship and their understanding of themselves and their ability to communicate what they need. Yeah, it's definitely, I've picked up some good skills from them in that way. I do think midlife, this time of my life, it is a unique time. And there are things that I definitely put no's to that I probably wouldn't have before either. And I don't know if that's just because I am older, because I'm grumpier. I don't know, you know, what it is, but it is different and I'm thankful for it. So. Mm-hmm.
I love what you said there about I guess kind of like they're just, you almost need recovery from them asserting themselves, right? And they just kind of move on. And that's what I found about things like, I don't know, like they won't allow themselves to go too long in a job being disrespected, like maybe a while to kind of, and I'm just like, wow. When I think about how much inner turmoil stuff like that would go on for me, and then they make the decision and they move on with it, and there's not a lot of thinking back, and there's not a lot of, so yeah, it's kind of fascinating to see all those growing edges as well. But yeah,
maybe in a, as we're getting older, the problem with not saying no, we have more time. So people, you think that you've got some time to fill. If somebody asks something of you, you haven't got that excuse that I'm too busy with my kids or whatever. And you might be tempted to say yes, 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 because otherwise you might feel guilty. And I've gone through this myself. I've got to fill up, you know, I've got all these empty days. How am I going to spend my time? Should I join this group? Should I belong to this charity? Should I help this person? And we could easily fill up our times with things which don't really resonate with us, which we're not really meant to do, just because we feel guilty about saying no, because we're the ones with time. I find that contrast comes across very much for me. I have a sister who's a full-time career. She has her own company. I'm at home working on my computer. And in some ways, she has a better excuse to say no. But I don't, and I have to be firm and say, no, I can't do that. So, yeah, it's knowing yourself, maybe, and as our children are, being confident that things aren't the right things for them. And not worrying about what other – you think by the time we get to our age, we'll stop worrying about what other people think of us. And to a big degree I have, but I don't like to be unkind. Or appear unfriendly because I don't want to join that charity group, or I don't want to help run that morning tea for the parish or whatever. Or, yeah, you know, I've got other things that I feel I value are my own things, that I don't have to join in with their valuable things. I have my own valuable things to do, and that's when I say no.
Mm-hmm. I love that, Sue. It's very true that if people, there's a tendency that if there's time that people don't think is accounted for, can slide in there. So, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Haley, do you have anything before we go? Are you good?
I was just thinking about, how much we can learn from our children, because I agree with all the things that you guys were just saying. And I just think how much better my children are at having those good boundaries and knowing what they think, because, you know, sometimes I don't know what I think. I have to really think what I think. Whereas I feel like sometimes they're a lot more in touch with that than, so there's just, yeah, I was just thinking there's so much we learn from them, isn't there? And that we continue learning from them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that just makes me think about that connection and that relationship piece, and how I'm looking forward to, and of course they're going to have their own lives and their own interests, but I'm looking forward to like all this talking I've been doing about there not being a blueprint. It's kind of interesting to see how the relationship with our kids will play out as well, because that's you know, to Missy's point, you kind of only have a certain point of reference. And yeah, it'll be interesting just to kind of see how that unfolds looking forward as well. So
maybe we'll have to redo this in 10 years.
Yeah, that's right.
I think also it's reassuring to think back and of all different stages of our lives, and yeah, sometimes it's hard to let go of one, but you can't move on until you've let go of one stage. You let go of babyhood, let go of the preschool years, let go of primary school years, whatever, let go of having children. But I have always loved where I've been, regardless of where I have. Each stage has had so many delights and challenges, yes, but overall, I've enjoyed every stage, and I see no reason why that shouldn't keep on going till the end of our lives. That if we have that attitude that, well, let go of this one and we'll look forward with wonder and awe and curiosity and anticipation to the next one, what is still in store for us? There, I'm doing things I never would have imagined doing 20, 30 years ago. So I probably won't be able to imagine what I'm doing next year or another 10 years. and look at it as exciting, rather than as something that we're fearful of or that other people don't seem to be enjoying. And I think maybe we've gained that as unschoolers, that mindset of always looking at things with anticipation and not control too, because when we let go of control, we don't have to stay in a particular stage of our lives clinging to it. We can just let it go and see where it leads us. So I was thinking about that you were saying earlier about suicide and expectations, and maybe society in a way controls people through those expectations. And I've been thinking a lot about mental health and control. And for no other reason, I would unschool to safeguard the mental health of my children and myself. And I think that's not something that's spoken about enough, is that a benefit that control is just so, it's just so terrible, isn't it, when you think about the results of control and people accept that as normal and it is just not right.
Well, but that's because there is a template in that, right? That control part, there's something to a container, if you will, that people can exist within, even if it's not good for them. And they know it deeply that it's uncomfortable, or that they don't want that external sort of force. But they kind of, my husband and I actually talking about today about institutionalization and how we all have experienced it to some degree, and you once you're in it, that's what you become so accustomed to, so that when it gets removed, you're not really sure how to operate. And yeah. I ran into that when I was working in the schools. I would go in and do like special classes for like fourth graders on the brain and brain development, and I didn't come in with that very strict, structured teacher way. I came in with my very unschooly, self-directed way, and these kids didn't know how to handle it. You know, they were just like, oh. And it was bonkers because, there's 20 plus kids. And I was like, oh, yeah, I guess I can't really unschool self-directed with 20 something kids who are used to this classroom setting. So it's that same thing, I think, that happens to adults. You know, they've lived in this structure for so long, and then they get to a point where that structure gets pulled away, whether that's retirement or some health crisis or something. And then it's like, how do I exist? I don't have my structure anymore. So that's what I think is so important about the flexibility aspect of unschooling and that lifestyle of just recognizing that it's not about not planning too. I don't want people to misunderstand this whole idea of living in the moment, because, we have to be realistic. There are things that make sense to think about and think about a few years ahead of time, but do so with the idea that you're being thoughtful and conscientious. You're not able to predict the future, and just know that you're doing your best, but you never know if those little little stones you've laid are going to be the ones you actually end up taking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Good. I really enjoyed this. Thank you, Sue and Missy, for joining today. This was just really good. So what I'll do is link each of your information in the resources, and also a link, Missy, to this article, and Sue to your most recent book. And yeah, this was good. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. And Sue, I know you have your whole day ahead of you, time wise. And Haley, I'm pretty sure you're heading to bed. So
yeah,
it's been a real pleasure, Erin. Thank you so much for the invitation to join you again. It's always lovely to come on your podcast. And being at the beginning of my day, I don't envy Haley, because if I was Haley, I would go to bed and all our conversation would be replaying in my mind, because there were so many thoughts there that I would want to think about a bit more. And so I wouldn't get to sleep tonight, but I've got the whole day to think about that.
Well, you're right, Sue, but it has been really lovely chatting to you both. So thank you both for joining us.
No, it's lovely, Haley. I haven't seen you for a while. And Missy, I hadn't met you before. So I've had a good start to my day. Thank you.
Yeah, it was so good to meet you, Sue. And thanks again for inviting me, Erin. And always good to see you, Haley.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
And this ends our conversation today. We hope you found it interesting and helpful. If you'd like to connect further or see additional content, Erin can be found on the web and on Instagram at Everlearning. Ashley can be found on Instagram at Ashley as Mama and Storytime Shelves. And I, Hayley, can be found on the web and on Instagram at Taking a Kinder Path. We'd love it if you'd share this conversation with anyone you think might like it. And if you've enjoyed this episode, maybe you'd consider leaving us a review. We'd love to hear your thoughts. We're so grateful you made time in your day to listen to us chat. Thanks so much for listening.